No prosthetic for that. You think you're merely sending this splendid foot soldier back home to Argonne with his tail between his legs, but I say you are executing his soul! And why? Because he's not a bad man. Bad men. You hurt this boy, you're gonna be bad bums. The lot of you. And Harry, Jimmy, Trent, wherever you are out there, you too!
Stand down, Mr. Slade.
I'm not finished. As I came in here, I heard those words. Cradle of leadership. Well, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. And it has fallen here. It has fallen. Makers of men, creators of leaders, be careful what kind of leaders you're producing here. I don't know if Charlie's silence here today is right or wrong. I'm not a judge or jury, but I can tell you this. He won't sell anybody out to buy his future. And that, my friends, is called integrity. That's called courage. Now that's the stuff leaders should be made of. Now I have come to the crossroads in my life. I always knew what the right path was. Without exception, I knew. But I never took it. You know why? It was too hard. Now, here's Charlie. He's come to the crossroads. He has chosen a path. It's the right path. It's a path made of principle that leads to character. Let him continue on his journey. You hold this boy's future in your hands, committee. It's a valuable future. Believe me. Don't destroy it. Protect it. Embrace it.
The nature of the Christian faith is that it's apocalyptic. That's a $10 word that means that it's a faith that believes that this age will end and then a new age will start. That all things that are will either be destroyed or transformed, and then a new age will begin. There is nobody, and I mean nobody, and I know some of you have heard this before, but it's worth reiterating once again. There is nobody in the early church who believes that they are going to die before Jesus comes back. They believe that Jesus' return was imminent. And as a result of that, every day that Jesus doesn't come back, as that time begins to pass, days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into years, people grow disheartened. Some just give up the race entirely. They give up the faith. They figure that this thing that was promised is just a fantasy, and so they wander away. Others, though, begin to pressure Paul. They begin to pressure him to change or alter the nature of the faith, to maybe add or subtract, maybe add things that would make the faith more attractive or a little easier, or subtract those things that make it more difficult in order to keep more people around. There was a lot of emphasis in that time. If you read the epistles, you see there it raises the issue of human sexuality quite a bit. And the reason for this is that most of, or many of, would be a more accurate term, many of the religions that people were pursuing at that time had some sort of component that involved a temple that would employ prostitutes. And so sexual practice was actually a part of trying to win a god or goddess, trying to win their favor in your life. And there were people that came from those backgrounds. And they said, Paul, you know, why don't we add this other thing? You know, attendance goes down, and I get the person that says to me, maybe we need to serve free beer on Sunday morning. We'll get attendance back up, right? We're not going to serve free beer. We're not Lutherans. So. Still others, those who predominantly came from a Jewish background, well, there were some that were advocating maybe adding some things to make the faith more palatable or welcoming. Those who came from a Jewish background felt differently. They felt like Paul was not really cracking down on these new, particularly these new Gentile converts, these people that had not grown up with the law. They wanted him to get serious about the spiritual disciplines as outlined in the Old Testament in the Torah. All of the laws that had to be followed and followed strictly. Because then they believed that then and only then would the day of the Lord arrive. See, the day of the Lord was, in that time and place, it was a powerful, powerful image. This idea that someday, as promised in the Old Testament prophets, that the world would be made the way that God had intended it in the beginning, that the world would be made that way at some point in the future. And it would begin with the day of the Lord, the day that the Messiah would come down the Mount of Olives, descend down towards the city, and then ascend back up through the Eastern Gate or the Temple Gate, and then into the temple, and then the Messiah would take a stick, his rod, and he would stab, and he would hit the floor, and a river would come up from the ground, and it would flow east and west out of the city. Water that wasn't dependent upon coming from the outside of the walls, because Jerusalem, which at that time in history had already been conquered 47 times, would now have its own water source, and it could stand forever. And at the point that that river would flow, there would be a great rising of the dead. I share this story every Palm Sunday, because that's what's going on in that story. Jesus descending down the Mount of Olives on a donkey. People proclaiming their hosannas. He comes up into the temple and he takes out his staff, all right. But instead of hitting the floor and river water flowing out of the temple and the dead rising to life, so that there would be this great army of people who could fight these battles and finally conquer these terrible Romans and set Israel free. Instead, he uses that staff to go through the temple and take out the money changers' tables, the place where you have to go to buy your sacrifice so that you may be right with God. And you were getting messed over, exchanging your Roman money for temple money, and then you were paying exorbitant prices for your sacrificial animal. You know, kind of like when you go to the ball game and pay $8 for a hot dog. This is a house of prayer, but you have turned it into a den of thieves. This whole image, this whole story is powerful during the time of Paul. It continues to be powerful for centuries thereafter. When Jerusalem was conquered by by its Muslim conquerors. One of the first things they did was they blocked up the Eastern Gate. If you go to Jerusalem today, you can see in the wall where the Eastern Gate was. That's how powerful this image is. We will build a mosque on the Temple Mount, and we will block up the Eastern Gate. And your day of the Lord will never come. That's what they're trying to say. So this image is powerful with Paul. So on the one hand, he's got people that's saying, we need free beer on Sunday morning to get more people to come. And then we got people on the other side saying, we're not holy enough. That's the problem. You're too permissive, Paul. You permit too many things. You don't call out sin as it is. If you did that, then Jesus would see that his people were pure, and then he would come back. That's why Paul writes what he writes in 1 Thessalonians. This idea that it's night, and you have to stay prepared during the night. You know, in a time where different people are being actively persecuted for their faith, when Nero is setting Christians on fire as human torches for his parties, and Domitian captured hundreds, maybe even thousands of Christians to be used in the Colosseum as entertainment and sport, while they would be devoured by lions or killed by Roman soldiers. It's dark. And Paul says, don't get drunk in the dark. Don't lose heart in the dark. Somebody told me in the first service, I said, I gave the definition of character that I think that they're after. That they're after here in the New Testament, that the word character comes from a Greek word that's spelled and sounds very much like character. And it's a word that means to stamp. Kind of weird. How did a stamp... When I mean stamps, like if you drive a Ford, you got the blue oval on the front of it, don't you? If you drive a Toyota, you got the weird little Toyota... You got the Toyota stamp. You got their symbol on the front of it. If you drive a GM, if you drive a Cadillac, or if you drive a Chevy, you got the little chevron thing for a Chevy. Everything that's sold, for the most part, has got some sort of stamp on it. Even when generic foods were a big deal, even generic foods came in the white carton with the black word that said milk, right? Everything's got a stamp. The stamp is what explains to you is on the inside of that product, what it stands for, what it's made of. And so that's what character means. The Greek philosophers coined the term when they would debate the nature of what it meant to be a human being. Is everything in our life predetermined by genetics or by a God who created us, or some sort of intertwining in between? Or is our life defined by our environment? Nature versus nurture. They were having that debate in ancient Greece. So they were trying to figure out the stamp that was on each and every one of us, how did that stamp get there? So now when we talk about character, we're talking about what is on the inside. What are we made of? What are we chasing after? What are our goals? What do we want to accomplish in this life? But somebody else after the first service said, one of the definitions of character that he heard is, it's the way you act when nobody is looking. That the stamp doesn't change. And Paul's getting at this, right? People are getting tired. You get tired, right? People who get tired make mistakes. I once worked one summer. I had like 6 or 7 weeks in a row where I worked every day, and it was like 10-hour shifts every day, 7 days a week. And I remember by the end of that stretch, I wasn't worth much because I was tired. And I admired the people who had been doing that for months. I had college to look forward to. They just had a lot of overtime that they were grateful for because it fed their families. But when you get tired, you make mistakes. You begin to wear down. You take your eyes off of the prize. And Paul says, we can't do that. We can't do that. Do what you need to do. Get some rest. Get some therapy. Take a little break. But don't lose sight of where it is that you're going. Too many people, when they have become worn down, make poor choices as a means of trying to deal with whatever it is that they have inside. And that's what Paul was dealing with. Instead, he said, you need to think about the trials and tribulations you go through in life. You need to think about them differently. There's been much debate about the second scripture that Lori read this morning. Much debate about Paul's thorn in his side, what the nature of the thorn was. Some scholars have speculated that maybe Paul was an epileptic and that his seizures were frequent and they were not easily controlled. Others have speculated that maybe Paul was born with some sort of handicap, that possibly he had contracted polio as a child and maybe he had difficulty being able to move around or walk around. Still others wondered if he was a stutterer or if he had migraine headaches. There are some scholars who believe that Paul was married and that his marriage wasn't any good. And so, whatever it was, Paul says he has this thorn in his flesh. And he asked God to take it away 3 times. 3 times he asked God, please, please take this from me. And what he learned after the 3rd time that he asked and it wasn't taken away, whatever burden that it is that you carry and it hasn't been taken away, whatever trial that you're going through and it hasn't been taken away, whatever cross it is that you have to bear, that you have to carry forward in life, and it's not taken away, Paul has said that what he understands this to be, what he has chosen to understand it to be, which is important, he's chosen to believe that this thorn in his side is God's way of helping him understand that the stamp reads, saved by grace through faith. That God's grace is sufficient. You and I have plans. You and I have dreams. You and I have successes. You and I have failures. You and I have all fallen short of the glory and of the goal. All of us have something that, or many things, it could be, don't know where you are on the spectrum, but we all have difficult things that we have to carry, experiences that stick with us and are in our memory. There are people that have post-traumatic stress disorder because that experience has been so powerful that it has altered the way that their brain works. This is something that is applicable to all of us. And what Paul says is he makes the choice, saved by grace through faith. saved by the grace of God through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Because that's where we find our character, the essence, the nature of existence, our reason for being, loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving our neighbor as ourselves, becoming fruitful, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, thankfulness, goodness, self-control, but those things becoming manifest in our life as what is unnecessary in our souls is burned away, thrown into the trash heap. And what's left has been tested by fire. And it is strong. I like to take my kids to the zoo. And every time we go to the zoo, we have to go to the reptile house. Because I hate snakes. And all my children take great joy and making sure that at some point in every visit that we make to the zoo, that we have to go see the snakes. Matter of fact, my senior, he was at a band thing last night, and a band show in Columbus, and it's like 20 bands. And the only time I heard from him in the band show was for him to let me know that one of the bands had a snake themed show. That the band slithered around like a snake, that the flag girls were dressed up in snake wear, and that they had big snakes on their flags. And I just said two things. That's child abuse, and I hate snakes. But at the snake house up in Toledo, at the Toledo Zoo, there's one of these machines, and you put like $1 or $2 in it, and it makes a bunch of noise, and it gets really hot, and it smells really bad. But if you wait long enough after you put the money in, out comes a little wax model of a rhinoceros. Why it's a rhinoceros in the reptile house, I have no idea. But that raw material has to be heated. It has to be shaped. Parts of it that's not useful have to be cut away, have to be pruned, and that's painful and that's hard. And if you decide by faith that that's punishment and that you're born under a bad sign or that there is no God and that there's nothing that matters and maybe there is a God and somehow God has taken you on as an enemy or something of that nature, going to put you in a bad spot. And it's antithetical to who we are as Christians. It's not who we are as Christians. Paul says, bring on the taunts. Bring on the beatings. Bring on the rejections. People want to speak bad of me? Bring it on. I count it as all's gain. Because as I have been hammered along the way, all that is not necessary gets beaten out of me, and what is left is strong. I know you guys, many of you have been through a lot. You've come to me and you've told me your stories. And I know that it has been difficult. But I say to you this morning, you're still here. You're still here. And just like Colonel Slade in the movie, who goes back to move in with his niece and her loud kids, but instead does so not as a recluse, ashamed of himself and afraid of the world, hiding in his room, but instead embracing this gift that God has given him, this family who loves him no matter what. You're still standing too. And you know you're blessed. And you can count and name those blessings. And so what I just want to say to you this morning, as you seek to continue to build resiliency, is keep moving forward. Don't give up. Don't stop. Keep going. If the load gets too heavy, ask for help. Ask it for the living God through the power of the Holy Spirit, or ask a friend to help carry the load. Don't give up. Don't stop. There's a reason why we had a huge crowd of people walking through downtown Lima yesterday in a suicide awareness walk. It is affecting too many people. Too many people are taking their own lives, even veterinarians. They say that male veterinarians take their own life a little over two times more than the general population, and female veterinarians do it three times the rate of the general population. Veterinarians! They're like the coolest people in the world! They get to work with animals, sick animals. But there's a lot of pressure in that. All of us have burdens to bear. And just like in the veterinary community, they formed a hotline called Not One More. So that if you're working in that profession, you have a phone, that you have a number you can call, and you can talk to others who have been veterinarians and now volunteer their time to listen to your story. Friends, do not give up. Keep going. If the load gets too heavy, set it down. And let the Lord bring you healing and peace. And what it is God wants you to give up, let it go. It's not that important to carry forward anyway. Press on toward the only prize that matters. That as you draw ever closer to the side of Jesus, which will be on the other side of this life, that you leave behind the things that matter and you only carry forward the things that do. Your integrity, your direction, your hopes and your dreams, not just for yourself, but for others and for this world. And press on.